We just had a whole plate of Dingamagoo, and now we're ready to bring you live from the five hole faxes from UncleDale.com's and the Sam Fells, but Who's Buying Newsletters official weekly podcast. I am Sam Fells of said newsletter. You can find me on Blue Sky at Fellsgate. We are coming to you after the huge debut of Antoine Frondel. Frondel what? Frondel
R. Antoine Frondel L.
Frondel L. Thank you. Couldn't remember it. So, of course, we have lots of thoughts. There's Illini Corner to be discussed. There's opening day. We have so much to juggle. So, of course, we are in fatal four-way formation with the usual crew leading up with Dr. Viral. He's the biggest jackass, no talent in the business. And he's the CEO of WBCW and Wrestling Brain's Twitch channel every Monday night at 9 Central. You can find him on Blue Sky at Torque Penderloin. It's Andrew Cieslak.
You can now find me in TNA's subreddit if you're really, really disgusting.
Are you actually in the actual TNA subreddit?
I posted a trolling post in there the other day. I bet
that went over great.
It did.
He's working the ones and twos for us tonight. He's our supervising technician and our technical supervisor, and he's Hollywood's go-to grizzled crank. You can find him on Blue Sky at Matt McClure, but please don't. It's Matt McClure.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan. And last but not least, he is the archivist. He's the goal line assassin. He is the oracle of Humboldt Park. You cannot find him on Blue Sky at Fifth Feather, but he might find you. He's lurking in the night. It's Fifth Feather John.
Hello.
Hello.
Jerry, hello.
Jerry, hello. So, gentlemen, the next era of Hawks hockey has begun because Frondel is here. Again.
No, Sam, it's Antoine Frondel L.
Antoine Frondel L. is here. He's in the flesh. He's got a big, dumb Swedish face.
He's in the flesh.
He's all of those things. I was watching, the last two games I've watched, which against a dog-ass Predators team that's apparently in the wild card spot somehow.
I hate them. God.
And then watching the Islanders. So I had a thought here, and you guys just tell me I'm wrong, and we'll then go on about last night's game. And
Sam's thought exercise.
Let's say Frondel and Kantsarov arrives in the fall. And let's not even have Bois Vert in the conversation. Just these two for now.
I'd prefer we didn't.
Joe Valeno the second.
And let's just say that Frondel and Kantsarov aren't great, but they're good. They're serviceable. They are representative. And they are in your top six. They are 20 goal guys. Just 20, not 25. Whatever. We don't have to put a number to it. I'm saying just representative. They don't take away. They might not jump out in their rookie season. You've got an entire blue line that's in their second or third year.
Keep in mind, we have a 30-goal guy that everyone on this podcast despises.
Hates.
Yeah. So.
He's still there. He's not going anywhere.
He's still here.
You have a top 10 goalie.
Goaler, sorry.
Let me rephrase. You have a top 10 goaler. Given what you've seen from the Pacific Division this year, isn't that a playoff team?
Should be.
It could be, yeah.
Your team rules.
And that's not with, you know, really them doing anything that projects to, like, greatness in the future. It's just guys being okay, being good.
Guys being dudes.
You expect Bedard to be better than he is this year, which is exciting.
Yep.
You know, maybe a somewhat improvement of Nazar. So I look at all that. I look at, you know, because it's only going to be, I think the projected out to less than 90 points to be the last wild card this year.
Well, Sam, I mean, what you're asking for is pretty tall timber, though, for Kantsarov and Antoine Frondel.
What I'm asking is Anton Frondel to be better than Andrei Burakovsky.
Yeah, which he is already.
Which he should be.
I think.
Yeah, but okay. Well, go ahead.
No, and you can rebut me for sure. You can debut and rebut me. I just think that if Sam's postulate is what is probably going to happen if Kantsarov ever comes here, those two guys coming into your top six and removing some detritus from your top six.
You're removing Burakovsky. I mean, Tavo's been removed, but you're probably removing. I don't know exactly what you're doing, Ryan Green, because he's kind of the only guy who can do what he does in the top six. He's just not good enough to be on the top six, but he's
right. You know, but again, if Bedard's playing with better players, in theory, he should put up more points than he has.
Yes.
And the guys with him should put up more points than they have.
Look at Nick Lardis. Sorry, not to get us off track, but it's a wonder what playing with better players does for someone. But I'm sorry to
And we'll get to him for sure. I think in Sam's world here that if those things are happening, it just seems like they're going to be better. But you have to help me understand how they're going to stop playing entire periods in their own zone. That's what I want to know.
Well. Okay, that's where this whole thing starts to crumble, because I can't.
And you can't make Jeff Blasil not a bitch.
Like, they get outshot every night. They get out. They get out attempted every night. They are somehow always within a goal, or somehow tied, or blowing a lead.
That's why they're within a goal, yeah.
Well, I know, and I just think, like, it's just not sustainable.
John,
so you gotta fix that.
You've been a coach, so you can explain this better than I can.
Not a very good one, but yes.
Not a very good one, but you've at least been in the role.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the Islanders are not very good. I know that they've been in a playoff spot, and I know they have Yeah, we know an Islanders fan, and he's about ready to hang himself at any moment. They have a few really good players, but this is not, you know, they're nothing but a goaler and a badge, really. How does a third period like that happen?
You've got a nitrous boost on the back end is what you've got.
Well, I think there was also a ton of desperation in that building, and a lot of, you know, they were squeezing it real tight, I think, when they gave up the four goals to the Hawks.
Right, but I'm trying to, I mean,
butthole,
like,
syndrome.
You have a 4-1 lead, right? So you're going to play the third period. Well, you're not going to do anything stupid, right? So you're just going to dump the puck in, make them more dump effects. It in, try and get it out. But does that only happen because the Hawks just don't have a forecheck? They cannot win it back when they dump it in. And the defense is filled with kids now who just cannot get out from being forechecked themselves.
And all your centers are light in the ass.
Like, the first shift of the game was the first line and the first pair just chasing the puck around for 45 seconds until Schaefer put it in on net and it went in. Right. It was like, it was so, I know they scored the next four goals, thank you, but it was so gross. It's I don't know.
I mean, what would want to see? I mean, I thought Renzel and Kaiser were actually fine. It was the other ones who were drowning. But what are they supposed to do in that situation that they can't do right now?
I mean, it's like you can't back off. You've got to harass at least. You can't concede to a player like that in Schaefer already. You can't concede at letting him get a full stride of his own zone to either be able to blow right by you while you're standing stationary in the neutral zone, or he can find a passing lane. He's too good of a player already he's already a trap buster. So you've got to, if you absolutely have to trap, move it up a zone. But like, even then, no, you just have to, someone's just got to be on his hip, stick on stick the entire time. Like, you can't, that's all, 17 shot attempts.
From a defenseman.
Again, like, maybe Ovi has done that, like, fucking Tage Thompson did it on that one power play last week. But, like, 17 shot attempts from a defenseman. Come on now.
Like, what are we doing here?
What are we doing here?
Well, it's also like, you know, there's their toy, and ours is flailing around trying to figure out how to eat rocks while the game's going on.
I'll say Levchenkov's been better.
It's going to take way longer than it should, and maybe he ends up being something resembling a finished product, but I don't know.
We watch Schaefer, right? And And maybe it's, you know, they're just two different prospects. And I compare them a lot, and maybe that's not fair, but Schaefer just has so much more puck skill than Levshinov. Like, Levshinov just, A, doesn't have a shot. Like, he had two open looks last night, terrified to let it go, and when he does, it's either nowhere near the net or the goalie.
Well, the terrified part is what has been coached into a lot of aspects of his game. So, again, this is,
right.
to me, that, like, it's all development. Like, his shit at least gets through. God only Sometimes. Knows where it's going, but...
Not the way it gets through when Schaefer has it.
Well, again...
And again, I don't want to hear, oh, well, they don't have similar experience. Yes, they do. like what was Schaefer in 2 years of junior?
And yeah, it's not like Schaefer picked up a stick for the first time when he was 18.
Right. But, like, Levshinov played in the USHL. He played 1 year at college. It's not like... Again, it's not like, right. you know, they took the bear skins off of him at the draft night.
Right.
And rolled him out there, you know? Like, you know, it's not like he'd seen running water for the first time at training camp.
That is how they try to spin it.
That's how they try and build it, but it's just not... I mean, he played for the number one team in the nation in college.
And was the best player in that entire league as a child.
I mean, do you see the same vision that Schaefer has with Levshinov?
No, but he's not scouted to be that player. Again, we thought it would be like a mini Diet Hedman. That's Schaefer's an entirely different type of player.
Yeah, but don't you need that type of player now than when you
in
drafted...
theory you drafted that one at number seven,
but
3 years
they
ago?
Hate him.
That's
Rinzel.
Yeah, either one of them. And then this is, again, this comes back to the complete ineptitude or lack of development.
Well, but if you're saying, like, okay, this is the player Levshinov is, he's more a headman now. Well, isn't a headman type player now the free safety of a top pairing? Aren't you then pairing him with, like, a Hughes, a Schaefer, a Hudson type?
Now, in this game, yeah.
Like, if you drafted Victor Hedman this year, like an 18-year-old Victor Hedman this year, are you then saying he's going to be paired with whoever we have is that the dynamic puck mover?
Eventually, but again, it's an entirely different era because during Victor Hedman's prime, they stacked that blue line with just complete ents, and yes. he was the most mobile of all of them.
Yeah.
So,
but you wouldn't build a blue line that way now.
No, and again. This is why I wanted Nolan Pratt.
I mean, the Hawks are building a blue line full of ants, to be fair. But they all can move somewhat.
Yeah, into the up the fucking hash mark and abandoning your post. They can certainly right. move.
I don't know. John, help me sort out my thoughts here.
Well, I mean, I'll zoom in a little bit for you, Sam. I think just looking at last night's game, the thing to me that stood out to me was that the Hawks were really just looking to just counterattack the entire game. I mean, they didn't really have anything other than wait for the Islanders to make a mistake. And then your defenseman kickstart a play or an odd man rush going the other way. I think three out of their four goals were all started because the Islanders either made a bad play at the offensive blue line or the Hawks kind of chipped the puck away from them. And that seemed to be their strategy, and it seems to be their strategy on most nights, and that's why they're getting outchanced 4-1 on a nightly basis. I feel like because they seem to just have this counterattack strategy without ever really holding the puck. You know,
well,
like
that doesn't get you anywhere.
Well, that's what
I mean,
I'm
that's
getting.
That's what
at.
I
yeah.
see too. Like that's. You know,
that's part of the problem. Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of the problem. And it gets back to your question about the defenseman. Why is Levshinov not looking like Matthew Schaefer? I think that could also be part of it. I think when Levshinov first came up, I think everybody saw a lot of things that they liked. And I think, you know, his vision
there's
was
still a lot of things. That,
yeah.
Like, but
it just seems they're trying to coach out all of the fun stuff we saw to make
right.
him something that they envision.
I mean,
and,
would I, like, if this Max is that, God, fucking big picture goddamn podcast again. But if you max this out, right?
Like, that's why I tried to zoom in for you, Sam.
Right, thanks. But like, what you've put forth there, and let's combine our two prompts. Right, let's combine our two scenarios. Right, Frondell, Katsarov show up, a little growth. Everyone's serviceable. You have no one playing below their spot in the lineup, even if they're not playing above it. And you're competing for a wild card, but you're doing it with this style that's meant to duck and cover and counterattack. To me, that means in 2 or 3 years, when you are really serious about winning, you've got to find a new coach and start all over.
You should fire him now and start all over.
And reprogram how these kids play.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that part as much.
Okay. We get there.
If we get there and they hire a coach who's allegedly the A from the B.
Right.
That's not something that's going to take too much time. That'll just happen. A good coach can come in and just be good right away. Doesn't need
right.
To be
yeah. I mean, when they made the leap from Savard to Quenneville, it didn't take.
Well,
it took a practice. I
right.
Think,
but
for
remember
them to...
how that went down is they actually brought some adults into the front office and were like, this guy's a dope.
Right. To get to that point. Right.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get there. Like I said to you in the real chat, Levshinov, divisive as he may be, also feels like the thing that could be some rope for Kyle to have to get away from, because I think it doesn't look great right now.
It's going to look worse if Demidov has a big playoff.
Yeah, it will. It'll be very frustrating to hear about all the takes, but Demidov's overall season isn't like anything too special.
I mean, I think it's pretty good for a rookie, isn't it?
I mean, he's doing well. It's not like he's having a bad year or anything, but he's not like blowing the doors off the league or anything.
Is he 54 points in 70 games playing with nobody? I'd say that's pretty good.
Who's he playing with?
He plays on the second line, so he doesn't play with Caulfield. He doesn't play with Suzuki. He doesn't play with Slavkovsky.
I'm not saying he's bad, obviously. Okay.
I mean, 54 points next to Connor Bedard would look pretty good right now, wouldn't it? Like...
Yeah, it would. That conversation's just not going to go. My point is what you're right. saying. That conversation's not going to go away. And then the
Becca. But we're the only ones having that conversation. Too. No one ever asked Kyle about it. Like,
then the guy that got drafted after Artie.
Right.
Even Seneca. Better. Even
yeah,
better.
He's even better.
He's got 70 points or something or whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. It's just like.
Again, not that we need to, you know. Yes, we know he's a scumbag, but who's he playing for again? Who's his coach?
Playing for a real coach.
Real coach. Bad guy. Real
bad
coach.
Bad guy, but a real coach. I don't know, John. You had a notepad. What else was on there?
That was it.
We could talk about the Lardis thing real quick if you want.
Oh, yeah. Go right ahead.
Well,
he's your guy.
He's still my guy, and I thought the whole thing about punishing him, playing him 7 minutes a night, and playing him on the fourth line, I don't know if that's Blaziel's way of trying to, like, send him a message and then he gets promoted and just lights it up or what. But if he gets yanked around again, it's going to be extremely frustrating. He doesn't need to be on the fourth line. He just doesn't. I don't know. It's just annoying that they finally move him up and look what he does.
They did this shit with DeBrincat too, another undersized OHL scorer. And he produced a little bit there, but then as soon as you put him on the top six, he's a fucking 40-goal guy. Whether or not any of those goals he's ever scored have
those
meant
goals might not matter, but yeah.
And he's a great little backup to clean up Frank Nazar's shit, because the guy is like a bomb goes off when he gets anything in space. He just forgets where he is, or his controller gets unplugged. That 2-on-0 was like
it's a fucking yard sale on a bunny hill.
What was that? It's like. Way too many passes. I don't know.
Well,
anyway.
I mean, I don't. You know, you don't want. And this is maybe this is still the Hawks having a problem of an organization that only trusts itself, right? But for the entire run here since we've been doing this, the Hawks have tried to keep a very clear delineation of what the GM does and what the coach does and what the front office or the owner does, right? So. We can sit here and say, why are you playing Lardis on the fourth line? But they don't want Kyle going down to the coach's office and being like, you have to play him here. But at the same time, there should be a symmetry on how Blashill and Kyle see developing these players. I would think.
There clearly isn't, because he's fucking points chasing and suffer pucking.
Kyle's just throwing prospects at him, too. You got Mustard and some other asshole on the way from more OH. Vaneker from the OHL.
So. Who there's no room for.
Unless you sit down some adult dopes.
Right. Well, I mean, you have Frondell, you have Bedard, you have Nazar. So there's three. There's three of the top six. Kancerov sounds like he's slotting right there. So there's four. Four of your top six. You know, Bertuzzi, they love him. He's not going anywhere.
He was still here.
You know, let's put Ryan Green and Oliver Miller on the third line. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's six of your nine spots on the top nine taken. Got Tavo still around. Okay, he's only around for another year. So we won't count him.
He might get bought out anyway.
So you
have to buy out Burakovsky, by the way. You have to.
I mean, they won't.
They won't, because he makes money. They're still doing this.
But you still get a good portion of that. Again, like, why not? Like, that's what they want.
If it counts against the cap, fine.
Yeah. I'm not saying trade him or whatever. Like, retain 50, but like, if you could just buy him out and free up the roster spot and then have that on there, because again, this is a fucking con, like, to get to the fucking floor, then yeah, go ahead and do that.
Right.
Like,
but I mean, you know, we just, okay, so three spots on the top nine. You know, let's say they actually, Kyle does get a wild hair on his ass and trades for a forward. Okay, now there's two spots. You keep telling me about Mustard, Nestrosil, Vaneker, Bois Vert, you know, all these other, the one you're going to draft in June, they don't all fit.
They're going to draft a defenseman, aren't they?
I mean, you could go ahead and draft a defenseman if you're going to go ahead and trade one for something real. And if that's Korch, that's fine.
Well, Korch isn't a guy. Who the fuck wants him?
Yeah, nobody wants him. Nobody wants him.
What's
anymore.
He worth? Nothing.
I mean, if you torpedoed his value, then that's on you.
If you were going to think, whatever you think you were going to trade Korch for is what you have to trade Levshinov for.
I mean, would you do Levshinov for Nye straight up?
Well, John's going to get to that.
Is he now? He?
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Is it that time?
Why not? Perfect segue.
I guess I mentioned it, so yes. It better be.
Yes. So this is hot off the presses on America's favorite segment.
Hot off the presses. Give me the timestamp, John.
1 hour ago.
Okay.
I found it rather easily, John, and I knew immediately this is what you were going to talk about.
Thank you. The title of the post is apparently a segment from Chuggo where they discussed that the Blackhawks were in discussion to acquire Knees, but Toronto wanted Levshinov, which killed the deal.
Wait, say that again?
Yeah.
The Blackhawks were in discussion to acquire Knees. This is from the Chuggo podcast, so I'm assuming that it's Jay. I don't know if it was at the deadline or before the start of the season.
We're not clicking on the video. Just
yeah.
You know,
okay. At some point, they were in discussion to acquire Knees.
But I find it hard to believe it was before the season.
It was probably around the trade deadline.
Okay.
Toronto wanted Levshinov, which killed the deal. Because I would insinuate that the Hawks didn't want to include Levshinov.
Yeah, that's what they're insinuating.
They didn't want the 23-year-old power forward, so they could keep the number two defenseman that they drafted overall, who can't find his head from his ass. And
John, it sounds like you're a little more down on Levshinov than I am.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. So can we get to the freaks?
Oh, please.
Because this is where it gets really good.
Apparently it gets pretty spicy in here.
First comment, 52 upvotes. Hawks front office is smarter than Toronto's in many ways right now.
Well, see, that actually might be true.
Let's see if you agree with the second comment, Sam. We sneaky have like one of the best GMs. I genuinely cannot think of one bad move Kyle Davidson has made off the top of my head. God. Nothing that sticks out is terrible at all for me. How about having a dog shit team for 5 straight years?
I don't want to argue with morons in absentia. I don't want to argue with morons when they're here. I'll just say Brandon Hagel.
Well, there's a response to it, and it's simply Taylor Hall.
Yeah,
Taylor Hall was his bad move. Apparently, extending Foligno. I mean, we could go down the list here. Anyway, Sam, the freaks love Levshinov, which should give everybody pause. Because somebody else in the comments says, as much as I would love knees, Levshinov is way too much. I want to get my, before I keep reading messages from the freaks here, I think the most telling thing to me about that, about this insight from the Chuggalos, is that basically the only defenseman that anybody's interested in for a difference-making forward is Levshinov.
Yeah.
You know, you can take Sam Rinzell and stick him up where the sun don't shine.
You're giggy.
Yeah, you're giggy. Korchinski, he's not even, I mean, you might as well just wave him at this point. You're not getting anything for him.
And you hate him, so you're not going to play him.
Who else? Is there anybody else?
No.
Louis Crevier certainly is not going to get you.
See, I maintain you could fool the Leafs into giving you a lot for Louis Crevier.
If you marketed him the way I suggest you market him, you could.
Yeah, but I mean, clearly not, though. I mean, they started their ask at Levshinov. They weren't going to, and probably weren't going to budge off of that. So that tells you that that's the only defenseman right now that other teams have an interest in. I doubt that it's much different for any other team in the league. If you were Kyle Davidson and you were to pick up the phone and try to call somebody to make a move for your difference-making forward in at a place where you don't have any spots anyways, as Sam just ran through, the only guy that anybody seems to be asking about is Levshinov. The rest of them that you can keep. So what does that tell you?
That Kyle's a genius.
Yeah.
Well, it tells me that no one's watched Levshinov play.
Could be that. Or it's at the point, I mean, so to, yeah, I mean, at this point now, like, you have to either go all in with Levshinov or cut bait and get what you can for him. Because he's only going
to
have this type of value for another maybe half a season. If you go into next season and it's the same crap,
he's done.
Yeah. Then you're at a Kevin Korchinski situation.
It would take a lot of guts, but these kind of things don't move without a lot of guts.
Right. Well, surprise that
Kyle's
freaks,
clock.
Yeah.
Right. Kyle's clock continues to be stuck if he doesn't make a move like
John,
that.
John, can we take a moment to just look at how funny it is that these Reddit freaks, maybe the Reddit freaks are not the same as the OPPs.
They're not.
I think there's some bleed.
The OPPs don't know what Reddit is.
Okay. Serious Hawks fans.
That's where Antifa organizes as far as the OPPs are concerned.
No, the OPPs are more in on the veterans, and they get mad that the veterans aren't
but
performing.
But still, it's serious Hawks fans who are duck and covering and wrapping themselves in the enigmatic Russian player.
Yeah.
And the Hawks fans I grew up with would have traded Levshinov after his third game.
Yes. He's all the shitty Russian guys that Mike Smith brought in.
Right.
That everybody hated immediately.
Right. And most of them sucked, let's be honest. But
they all sucked.
The only good Russian Hawks I've ever had was Igor Kravchuk, and we know this.
Okay,
and Ilya Mikheyev, apparently, or whatever John calls him, Mikhaev. Sergei Makarov.
31 upvotes for this one. I think you can tell the fans that know anything based on their reaction to this. The objectively correct take on this is that Davidson should have laughed Trevelyan's dumbass off the phone.
Well, again,
authoritative.
In one sense, I agree with that. Like, so.
Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I'm real scared of this guy.
I mean, you should always laugh at Brett Trevelyan's stupid ass. Like, don't get me wrong.
And again, this is all more loser shit anyway.
Well, the
because
overwhelming
with deals of almost deals that almost happened.
Right.
Yeah, the overwhelming sentiment is you just got Antoine Frondel L, and now you're already trying to acquire another winger as if like because he's here, you don't need other wingers, you don't need other good players.
Oh, like, right. Hakinato is going to break out of this slump. Just you wait.
I mean, I think for the first time in his Hawks career, Hakinato is slotted right where he should be.
Yeah, and
he's beyond somebody else's roster.
Well, yeah, but failing that.
Yeah, carrying a nice fucking 12 share last night too.
He right, he's a fourth line player who can skate in a straight line and shoot, and that's it.
And I will give Blashill credit.
I thought he was a two way defensive dynamo, Sam.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys saw Blashill's quote about him. He said, "It's nice that Ryan Donato scored a bunch of goals last year, but he needs to score goals on a team that's good."
He really say that?
Yes. Official,
you can't argue 100%. With that, Slack.
No, I'm saying that's good. That's a good thing that he says.
See, that's the thing. That's the thing about Blashill is he does some things, and I'm like, yes, that's absolutely right. Like, he says the right things. Because if
I think
you go
getting
back,
really sick of a lot of the players on this roster,
right? Like, if you go back through and you read his quotes about Levchenkov, he says the right things. Like, we want him to do this, and we want him to do that. And John, you've talked about this. Like, you know, we look at it. He's like, no, I want him to be aggressive. I want him to do things that we wouldn't expect. I want him to try these things. And it doesn't happen on the ice. So what is the disconnect there? Are you telling the press one thing and him another? Or are you telling him, is your message consistent, but you're just not getting through to him? Because I think Blashill says all the right things. Like, when I read his quotes, I'm like, yeah, most of them. Not always. The stuff about Lardis obviously drove me up a fucking wall. And obviously the way they play drives me up a wall, but like that sort of thing. When Slack's like, "Yeah, he's talking about Ryan Donato, and he's absolutely right about Ryan Donato. Great, you scored 30 goals on a shit ass team. Who cares?" You know, and he's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, he is.
So I don't know.
So all these people are getting, anybody that agrees with doing a knees for Levchenkov one for one are getting downvoted to Bolivia. You'll be surprised.
I don't know, but
here, hold on. Let me read a couple of the ones that have been downvoted off the page. These are great. Cam Barker for Norris, great screen name. Says, "I will personally drive Levchenkov to Toronto."
Okay, he's got to be a listener of ours.
And then the response is, "Stay there with him." Just like so offended at the idea that somebody. Here, one for one, done deal, minus 16. I mean, I would probably do this, and I like Lev, bunch of down votes. That's not even like a harsh comment. Someone deleted their comment, which must have been earth-shattering. Something. Yeah. So it's just like this whole – I think the reason John and I are so obsessed with this stupid place is because it's just – they are out of their mind. Like, I don't – it's a place where you can't have a discussion in any way, shape, or form. And it's just, it's addictive to go in there. No, this is the worst. This is worse than the 300 level and all those other shitty Hawk blogs that existed before Second City. It's so bad.
You wrote for?
That wasn't even a blog.
Well, everyone in the comment section got to end up, you know, getting a Photoshop made about them and have some inside joke end up in Puck Daddy.
Well, the thing that drives me up the wall, Andrew, is it feels like there's a different Hawks game that they watch.
Yeah. I don't know.
I clearly have not seen. Right. Well, it's just as bad there, Matt.
I think the biggest thing for me personally, as I'm the fan out of the four of us, and you guys actually know the game, but after seeing three cups and then having to deal with the Kyle Beach stuff, it's just not the same to me as it was, and it never will be.
Of course not.
It's not the same for me either.
No. It hasn't been the same since August of 2015 for me.
And I don't know how these people are not, like, at least a little jaded. They're not. Some of these people aren't jaded at all. And
they're adults.
That's what I'm trying to understand how that's possible.
I think,
they can just block it all out. I mean, it's the same, you know. I mean, it's, you see it everywhere else, Slack. I mean, you know, we see it, you know, we do it for our wrestling fandom. We block out things about some of our favorite wrestlers and we just sort of pass it off, you know, like, and that's a choice for everyone, where your level is at.
Well, and I'm not even, yeah, sorry. And I didn't mean to get to rehash, obviously, the
right.
Scandal.
We're not doing that.
I'm saying in general, like, if you take that out, which I'm not saying you should, but what I'm saying is when the team you care about the most has a really long run of success, it's not the same after that, no matter what. You know what I mean?
It's my only experience with it, honestly. I don't think any of the other teams that support have had a long run of success like that. Certainly.
Right.
I mean, I wasn't that big of a Bulls fan, so you know, that them dropping off of 6 championships in 8 years, it's just not the same for me. Maybe it is for you guys. I don't know. You know,
well, we don't cover the Bulls.
We didn't cover. Well, yeah, but you guys were Bulls fans.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I was for sure, and I was as of maybe not that long ago, but right now I can't.
Right, but
watch,
like, how did you? Okay, so you big Bulls fan. You see the 6 championships, and then it's 7-8 years later, and you get the dang Heinrich Gordon team.
I think it's different because I was a kid.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
And not as plugged in as when the Hawks won their things. I was,
right,
you know, reading as much as humanly possible, watching, you know what I mean? Like it's a little bit different.
I mean, we can only answer this question when the Hawks are actually good again, you know, and how we feel about that. I mean, you know, later in the show, we'll get to the Cubs. It's different for me. It's probably not different for Slack, but that's a personal thing.
I think if the Hawks played an exciting brand of hockey that was fun to watch, I think
they were
winning. It would be and winning.
Not even
it would be very easy,
like,
to get right back on board with it.
You know, this
was
reminds
fun
me
for
of,
about 3 weeks in early November,
and that reminds me of what I brought up. I think also in this hex thread is reminiscing with people about Martin Havlat when he came here,
right?
But you remember what it was like when he showed up and Hanzus first showed up with his glorious mullet and not 100 medieval illnesses that were killing him slowly. We watched
not
that,
all that slowly.
We watched that for whatever 8 games it lasted, and it was like, oh my god, it can be like this,
right? But you know, when Matt talks about the 2 weeks in November or late October when Bedard was going nuts and they were winning games, and we kind of knew it was empty,
yes,
but like we were still having fun. Like that, the reason I keep watching is that connects me to that Havlat era Hawks, right? Like I'm like, oh, this kind of feels like that, and I like how that felt, and I like how this feels.
Yeah, I think that's what we're chasing. It doesn't
that's
have to be.
I mean, that's what you're chasing in any fandom.
Yeah, and they're not there. They were there for a couple of weeks.
But in like it'll be different because it won't. Like if you're doing that sort of connection and that's what you're getting off on, that's great and that's enjoyable. But it's not if you're not, you know, and like that's a different sort of fandom. You know, but it's fine. But yeah, like that's, you know, that when that happens, it's like, okay, I don't feel this quite as deeply or, you know, it's not as important as it used to be, but like, this feels similar and I like still being connected to that and who I was then, even though I was a shithead during, you know, the Havlat era. And, you know, I like being reconnected. I like those memories. I like who I was hanging out with and all that stuff. And
it's a fun way to feel on a chilly, cold, you know, late November night. On a Saturday when you're, you know, out drinking beers with the homies. That's all it is.
Right.
Anyway.
The point is, Levchinov sucks and they should trade him for knees.
and Nick Lardis rules.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just don't know how you could be that attached to Levchinov at this point that you wouldn't, like, it's just complete. Out of the question, completely out of the question
to
consider trading him.
I don't want you to go count, but just ballpark it for me. On that thread, all the comments who are laughing it out of the room and think it's the most ridiculous thing they've ever heard. How many people are we talking, you think?
I think it's about 60.
Okay. Of those 60 people, how many have seen Matthew Nyes play a game?
3.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, if you read down the thread, they're judging him on his point total and nothing else.
Right, exactly.
Which tells me all I need to know. They don't know anything about him.
Correct. He's a center, right?
Yeah. He plays center, right? We got so many centers.
Sorry, no room for you here.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway.
Anyway,
what we're supposed to do is every time we watch a game, we see a young player fuck up, we're supposed to see her and go, well, Nick Foligno would have told him not to do that.
Mm-hmm. Apparently that's the new rule with...
Who the fuck cares what Nick... He's gone! It's over now!
Oh, wait, Okay, you keep on your Foligno thing. There's a good Foligno comment. I gotta find
please.
It.
Oh, please, give it to me, Nate.
Well, keep on your Foligno thought.
No, that was it.
Okay. It was about Kyle being a great general manager, and it is... Hold on. Efforting.
This is great for you listening. You know, it's stuck with me on the Edens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Found it, gang. From Machete Mabel. And this is when they're everybody's giving flowers to Kyle here for being a
he's a great GM.
Sneaky one of the best GMs with one of the worst winning percentages in NHL history. Here's what Machete Mabel says. I honestly think dealing Foligno, he doesn't say it, but it's Foligno, to Minnesota for no return so he can play with his brother and try to win a cup will leave a mark across the league. There was already talk about bigger names being more interested in the Hawks. If they know the team takes care of players like that, it'll only make that stronger.
No, you know you can come here if you are a con man. This is a make-work program for fucking bums and con men right now from the top on down.
I'm going to be fair to Machete Mabel here.
Okay.
Because I've seen that written by guys who get paid to write about hockey. Like,
it does make a difference if they do you a solid, whatever. But again, the most it's done is bring losers here for how well everyone gets treated. Right. The only players that are here are losers. No other team in their right mind would pay.
Right. What you'd like is the only solid you have to do a veteran who wants to sign here is come here and win.
Correct.
That's the solid we'll do for you.
Right. So the solid. Yeah.
What about the taxes?
I don't understand this logic at all. So like, you want to go play for a GM who's going to have a loser team and then ultimately trade you for nothing?
5 years going later, out in the first round,
and so you could win a cup with your brother.
I mean, it's not going
to
happen.
No, it's not even going to come close to happening.
You know why they're not going to win a cup? Because they traded for Nick Foligno on purpose.
Correct.
Why would you do that? You're supposed to be good.
They spent actual time considering this and doing it.
Makes no sense.
Bill Guerin is still drunk on Italian wine.
And to be fair.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to know what bigger names are being more interested in the Hawks. Why?
There are no big names that are free agents anymore, you dipshits. Right.
And what big names, even if there were, would be interested in the Hawks? Was Mitch Marner interested in the Hawks? Maybe, but the Hawks put the not interested sign up right away.
They wouldn't know.
Right. Yeah,
they didn't care.
They didn't. Yeah, because like even if there is mutual interest, in order to make it happen, in order to, you know, to quote the nameless Alec Baldwin character in Glengarry Glen Ross, sign on the line which is dotted, you have to trade for the rights preemptively, where you could do a sign and trade and give them the extra year. It means even more now with them shortening each of those increments in the new CBA. So like you it doesn't even matter whose interest is where. Like if you want to land a big fish, you have to throw out even the extra bait like that, to belabor the metaphor. So yeah, who gives a shit about interest anyway? The only way this team is going to materially improve in any seismic kind of way is going to have to be through trade. That's just how the league works.
And nobody wants to.
Yeah, can't trade any of your guys because they're all too. They're all too potentially good.
Exactly.
Good. Maybe one day.
Yeah, maybe.
And then
one
they'll
day.
Tell you, you know what? It takes years for a player to become good.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't give up.
Nope.
What happens if that guy becomes good later and you traded him? God forbid.
Well, well, let me tell you something about Brandon Hagel.
It'd look pretty good on Bedard's wing right now.
That's kind of exactly what they need.
Right. All right. Let's move on to fun stuff. Even though John and Zach don't want to do it, I'm going to make them. Is it Thursday or Friday?
Now? It's Wednesday.
No, I know what date is now. The line at corner. Is it Thursday or Friday?
It's tomorrow.
Thursday,
as we're recording today, as you're listening to this. So it's time for line at corner. Set it up for us, boys.
They're going to lose 0-17. They're going to
0-17.
Houston is playing at home, and they're super good. Illinois also good, but they don't have the chops to beat a Houston.
0-17.
Not going to happen.
Houston's going to win by 40.
It's going to be bad. I'm not looking forward to it. If they win, though, the path is pretty good because you're just having to win a Big Ten game, which they can do.
Then a lot.
Yeah.
Is it in the Texans Stadium? Is that where they're, or they're the Rocket Stadium?
The Rocket Stadium. They play like the campus is 3 miles from the stadium.
Oof.
It's really.
I just want to say, and I said this on the real show, the number 2 seed getting to play at home in the regional is unfair. If it's the number 1 seed, okay, that's the deal.
Right.
But the number 2 seed should not get that benefit. They send their ass to the East or whatever.
Yeah, it's not good. So
garbage.
I've just seen this like Houston team was built to destroy the team I like. It just
What's the big road win on the Illinois resume this year?
Purdue.
Yeah, Purdue.
They also won another road game, Andrew. At that same time, they beat in Nebraska when Nebraska was like 20 and 1. That was another big road win for them. But they almost won it at Izzo's house. They sort of had that one stripped away from them.
So it's not beyond them.
No,
of course not.
No, but we've just Andrew and I have seen this movie too many times.
Yeah, the Purdue game was. The Wagler went for like 45 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right.
That was fantastic. He's going to have to do that again, potentially. But I mean, they need to make their threes plain and simple. If they're ice cold, it's just curtains.
And if they go into overtime, it's over. They don't win
any overtime games. So that's,
And they need their coach to not coach the game with both hands around his own neck.
Correct.
If Illinois basketball is a top 4 Big Ten second weekend of the tournament team every year, I'm good. That works.
It's like the golden age of Illinois basketball.
It is right now, no question. It's unquestionably the best stretch they've ever had.
They put together like they're one the only great team a couple times, but
they're like one of 4 colleges that have won 20 games for 7 straight years. I think it's a very small list.
And his teams are radically different every year.
Yeah, he just finds guys who are good.
Well, that's the deal now.
Yeah,
you can't.
But
keep
he's
a
doing
team
it the right way. Like in the past, we'd be like, Bruce Weber is afraid to cheat to get good players. And they're never going to be good. He's too nice.
He's got polio.
So 0-17.
0-17 still. Yeah. I got you. Yeah. All right, John. Now it's just you. Spotlight coming on you.
Okay.
Good luck with your first.
It's time for White Sox Corner.
Okay.
Where is opening day tomorrow, by the way?
Hell.
where do the Sox open the season?
Efferdine. Where do you think?
I would guess Kansas City.
Minnesota.
No, Andrew, didn't you say the other day you're going to be cheering for the Sox?
Oh, that's
in their first
right.
Series?
They're in Milwaukee. Yes.
Thank
go
you.
Sox.
Oh,
go
yeah. Sox. Ugh, terrible.
The fans are going to have a tough one. The Sox have to play against Sox fans' second favorite team.
Right.
Tough one for you guys.
You know what, though? The Sox are going to take 2 or 3 here because you know how this works, Slack. The Brewers like start the year like 10-10.
Last year, they gave up 20 runs in the first
game.
And
over 3 games, they gave up 104 runs to the Yankees.
Yep.
And then they were like 10-10 or like 14-15. You're like, all right, don't have to worry about that. And then they go 30-1.
Yep. They're like the Wild of baseball.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
Or I guess, John, take your pick of AL Central teams that you despise.
Correct. Yep. Right. Same thing. Same vein.
Anyway. All right.
And then immediately get trounced in the playoffs.
What are you watching as a Sox fan this year?
Nothing. No, Sam, I can't tell you
you're
that.
You're excited. You were texting me on the first spring training game. Don't give me that shit.
No, I was.
You're ready
more
to go.
Excited. I would have been more excited had Kyle Teal not started the year hurt.
But they have another catcher, don't they?
Yeah, but it's not the same. Edgar Cuero. He's just not as dynamic as Kyle Teal. Cuero's obviously a very good catcher, calls a good game, good framer, can throw people out, good defensively, makes good contact, just doesn't hit for the same power as Teal. and Teal does everything else Cuero does, except obviously he's got a stronger bat, hotter stick, as you would say.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't, but you would. Now, yeah, but I mean, pitchers, otherwise, the pitchers you're supposed to be expecting, they're not going to arrive till June, July, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is we're the opening day is not when the time to watch this White Sox team. It's probably going to be in the middle of the summer when they get Braden Montgomery called up, when they have the two lefties, Schultz and Hagen Smith, as part of the starting rotation. You know, that's when you're actually going to be looking at things that matter. When they draft the number one pick, the guy out of UCLA, and they, you know, put the jetpack on him and he rockets his way through the system, that's going to be, again, you know, another thing. So, you know, this is a classic, which has happened too many times in the past 15 fucking years, of a White Sox opening day roster that you just don't pay attention to. Because it's not the team that's going to end the
Meadroth?
Season.
Meadroth? How do I say this?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Okay.
He's a nice player.
Okay.
And Mooney, Murakami, obviously, will be fun to watch.
Maybe.
Oh, he absolutely will be fun.
He might be Rob Deere.
That's fine. The Sox haven't had anybody like that in a long time.
There's no reason to piss on it from our perspective. Like, let him eat, see how it
Correct.
Goes.
Yeah, yeah.
And he only signed a 2-year deal, so you know it's going to work out well. If he had signed like a 5 or 6 year deal, everybody would have put a ton of pressure on him, yeah. And he would be Adam Dunn.
Next
and
year,
get all the Adam Dunn comparisons.
55 homers, and they're going to have to trade him.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's going to be it's going to work out really well for him. So I think he's going to actually be pretty good.
He'll have a binge.
He's going to be good, not based on any scouting, just because of the contract situation and karmically Correct. The way things work out for
Correct. That's Andrew analysis. Gets it. Andrew
He'll have 1 month where he hits like 15 homers, right? Like,
Correct.
Just be like, he catches a bunch of bums on the mound.
It'll be like, yeah, with like, it'll be like Jose Abreu, when Jose Abreu right. would have like his month and a half where he would go nuclear. And then, but in the meanwhile, he'd start the season, you know, 1 for 72.
Yeah,
because it'd be, you know, every game would be 50 or below.
Right.
You know, Andrews Montgomery, I think he's fine. Again, he's another guy that can hit for power. So they have some interesting power bats. And that's why I think I'm most bummed that Teal is starting the year hurt, because he was another one of those power bats. So if you combined him with Mooney and Montgomery, you're actually looking at a formidable meat of the order, so to speak, that the Sox haven't had in a long time. But otherwise, I mean,
they actually catch the ball, which White Sox teams are not known for.
Well, that seems to be something that they're focusing on organizationally, which I mean is probably about 40 years too late. But hey, they at least Chris Getz knows what he's looking at, knows what offends his sensibilities.
I'm looking at the 40 man and the outfielders on the team.
Dog shit.
My God. So it's Benintendi.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Austin Hayes, who I got time for Austin Hayes. Derek Hill, who shouldn't be in the major leagues probably.
And he won't be for long.
Everson Pereira, I'm not familiar with him. Is he a
He's a Tampa Rays guy.
Oh, that well, okay. They let him go, then he probably isn't.
Yeah, if the Rays didn't feel the need to keep him around.
Then whatever a Tristan Peters is.
Tristan and then you got the Acuña.
Who's not an outfielder?
Well, he's a shortstop, isn't he?
And he's not a switch hitter either.
They got him listed as an outfielder, so they're probably playing him in center.
Super utility sort of thing?
I think they're going to put him in center. I think that's where he's starting.
On the MLB website, he's listed as an infielder. That's what I'm
on the White Sox opening day roster that they posted on their social media
today.
Oh,
the social media. Okay.
They listed him as an outfielder.
And I'm sure Frank Thomas is suing them about that post as well.
Absolutely.
He needs money.
Frank
is broke.
But that's what I'm saying, Sam. Like, check back in June, July.
Okay. And we will. Don't worry. Yeah, we won't have anything else to do.
They got that other Sam Antonacci. He's going to probably be up at some point.
I mean, after we do the second best show of the year. There's going to be nothing. So, you know, we're going to have to talk about White Sox prospect corner.
You got Caleb Bomer, Andrew's boner. That's going to be coming up at some point.
Caleb's boner, yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be one of those seasons where the first month is going to be just annoying because it's going to be a bunch of guys that won't be on the team at the end of the season.
Placeholders.
Yeah, which sucks. It's a shitty place to be as a fan.
Yeah. The league, the system just doesn't allow for maximized fun sometimes in these situations specifically. I mean, this is like Mike Olt. Everyone on the roster is Mike Olt.
Yep.
I had high hopes for Mike Olt.
Well, that's all we had. There was nothing else to hope. There was nothing else to care about.
No. And it became pretty apparent that there was nothing to care about with Mike Olt.
Yes, but we did have the one glorious what the fuck was that guy's name? God damn it. I can't remember. That team, that roster, that era.
Junior Lake?
They had some journeyman guy who had like, he was hitting like 830 in his first like four games, and it just was like stupid. It didn't matter.
Darwin Barney?
No, not Darwin
Barney. The Purple
Barney.
Evolutionist.
I fucking hate Darwin Barney.
Yeah.
Find out. Hold on. I'm efforting.
He's efforting. Well, John, I guess I want June to get here for you.
Thank you.
Because, you know, if the Illini have no hope and, you know, we know what the Hawks are, you need something on the calendar.
Absolutely.
You know, I worry about you.
No hope, no jobs. No
I cash. Worry about the father figure you can be if you don't have something to cling to.
I know. I can only hold on to the draft for so long.
Right. I mean, you know, training camp will get here and then you'll be fine. But
yep.
But until then, I want you to have something.
Did you effort and see if when the last time the Sox had a winning spring training record? Not that it matters.
That wasn't what he was efforting.
That was my homework assignment for you, Sam.
Was it?
Yeah.
When did you send me that?
I sent it at the end of the last show.
Oh, well, I didn't do it.
Well, okay. I don't even know if they ended up with a winning record of the spring training. I know that they won a fair share of games, but I do know that it's
Have you been down to Camelback Ranch?
Never.
You should go.
Yeah. No one's going there. It's been 107 degrees. You have a death wish if you go there.
Well, you don't go also, at the very end. Like you go at like the beginning when it's still cold.
And it's also they gouge flights and hotels. I heard it's miserable. Yeah.
And
I
gouge
no
the
interest.
Tickets too.
Fuck yeah, that. It gets pretty fucking expensive these days.
Which is ridiculous. True. I mean, the reason why you would go back when we were kids is because your parents could pay $20 and everybody would go to the game. It was just not something that you could do at home.
The player in question was Emilio Bonifacio.
Ah, yeah, he sucked. Yeah, I mean, once they moved all the teams around Phoenix, because they used to have a couple in Tucson. I don't know if you remember that.
Tucson.
And then, so like everyone's coming to the same place. Yeah, they really jacked up the prices. Mostly because like everyone's going to the same place. Everyone wants to stay in Scottsdale, you know?
Hard pass. They want to go to Bottled Blonde with Greg Bovino.
You know, I went 10 years ago and it was fun then, but I don't know that I would do it again. If I didn't have all the money, which I don't. All right, then. I guess it's time for the Cretans.
We're not doing Cubs Corner?
Nope.
I can do a quick Cubs Corner. They're going to win the division. I don't think there's anyone other than the Dodgers they have to be worried about. And I see a lot of people gnashing their teeth about the bullpen, but Jed Hoyer policy I agree with is you don't pay for a bullpen. It's like college sports. You shake the Yahtzee can and you see what comes out.
Right. And the guys that start the season in the bullpen are not going to be the guys who end the season.
You're going to have four new guys by the trade deadline, so who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah.
Four by the trade deadline, and then probably three or four other minor league call-ups throughout the season.
And then a bunch of weird trades Aaron Savali will probably come back or whatever. He's been
he'll be like striking out 30% of the guys for no reason.
Yep. Bullpens are dumb, and if you're worried about them, you're dumb.
You're dumb. You know, I guess if Seiya doesn't get completely healthy and PCA strikes out a lot, I guess the lineup doesn't really have that much pop, but, you know. Worry about that when it gets here.
They'll be fine.
They'll catch everything, so that's good. They have, what, eight starters? 7?
Something like that.
When Steele gets healthy?
Yeah.
So that's good. That's where you want to be. So yeah, should be a good time for everyone involved.
All right.
Speaking of which, you can catch me on the Pointless Exercise Opening Day podcast tomorrow, or today, as you're listening to this.
Feels like there's a high chance of that game not happening.
Yeah, baseball-sized hail.
Yeah, so, the weather is not looking
good. Is that bad?
I think that's bad. So if it doesn't happen, I don't know if the podcast will happen, but maybe they on Friday, and I'll do it then, just drunker. So there. Yeah, so look for that. All right, get to the Cretans. I only have one question from my prompts. Longtime guy, Mike Jacoby. Best concert lineup you've ever seen. In 98, my friends and I were able to see Tribe Called Quest open for the Beastie Boys. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I have a couple. Jesus and Mary Chain opening for Nine Inch Nails was
that was recently.
That was recent.
Does it count if it was recent? I mean, I feel like it's worth more if it was in the 90s.
I'm trying to think of long ago. I saw Lizzo open for Sleater-Kinney.
What?
About 10, 15 years ago. Yeah, before she'd released an album. Soul Coughing and Meat Puppets was one. Wait, going back, Primus and Rush is probably the top of this list as far as like a full bill. Yeah, those are some.
I guess your mileage may vary. The one that comes to mind, I'm sure there's others. I've been to a lot of concerts, but I saw Mars Volta open for Soundgarden.
That's pretty good. Oh, well, you kind of hate Mars Volta now.
I mean, they're not very good, but they are famous.
Right.
And I mean, they could have been good.
Sam, didn't you get to see Minus the Bear open for Soundgarden?
I saw Minus the Bear open for
at
Soundgarden.
At the Vic,
I really
right.
wish I would have seen that one instead.
At the Vic, yeah.
Well, I saw this one at UIC.
That's still pretty good. UIC is a good concert venue.
I had a great time.
They don't do concerts anymore there, which sucks.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Now we've got Concord Music Hall.
Too small.
I think Concord's, yeah, would not
very
as
small.
Big as UIC.
I know, but
what is just the 10,000 seat concert venue, right? I don't even know. Anyway,
I don't know. Maybe Wintrust.
I guess
I can't remember ever seeing a show advertised there. But
yeah, I don't either. I've just seen wrestling.
Yeah, just wrestling and the sky.
For me, it would be 2001 August Plea for Peace tour that had.
So it's your fault.
Yeah, pretty much. No, it's Mike Park's fault, as it is most okay. things. It was Illusion of Safety era Thrice.
Jeez.
Then Jupiter era Cave-In.
My personal friend Riley Breckenridge.
Indeed.
Yep.
Then
wow.
Cave-In touring on
era Cave-In. Fuck.
Touring on Jupiter, then Hot Water Music touring on A Flight and a Crash, and then the closer was Alkaline Trio 2001, their first ever show with Derek Grant. And then
what about Lou Grant, was he there?
Yes.
What about Horace
and Harvey?
Oh my.
And it was about 9,000 degrees outside, and I didn't have
what
it had to be. It had to be.
And no,
where was this?
The Metro.
Oh God, the smell.
Yeah. Oh, and you could still smoke in there, and indeed I did.
I still think the worst venue for sweat was Double Door.
Oh, no question.
Okay.
But because drove all the way in from the suburbs and didn't have a fake, so was definitely not drinking, but definitely went through about half a pack of smokes, and for a 5 hours worth of show. But it was awesome.
All right. That's the only one I had, Slack.
I didn't hear John's answer. Does John not have an answer?
No, I don't have an answer. I don't compare to you guys.
John wasn't as cool as us.
Oh, no. I do have one. The first concert I ever went to, I was 12 years old, and it was Boys to Men opening for MC Hammer.
I mean, damn.
That's pretty awesome.
That's cool. And I got a picture with MC Hammer.
Was that Rosemont?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the first concert I ever went to was actually pretty stacked, too. It was Horde Tour 97 at Alpine, so that was, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Morphine, Ben Folds.
R.I.P. Sandman.
Primus, who I was there for, and Beck, and then Neil Young, who my dad hated and we walked out on.
Oh, come on.
My dad was a prog rock guy. You can't blame him for hating Neil Young.
I saw Sonic Youth open for Pearl Jam once.
I saw that tour.
Indianapolis, yep.
I saw it in Saratoga.
Nice.
Yeah, 2002, 2001, right about there?
Yeah, I was in college, so yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was in college too. Yeah, I saw that too. That's a good bill. Yield, right? Is that?
I think so. Might have been that shitty avocado one. I can't remember.
No, that was before that. I think it was
okay.
Yield. Speaking of Alpine, I saw the Sonic Youth Pearl Jam.
I got to see the Buzzcocks open for Pearl Jam in like 2002 at Alpine.
Yep. My two favorite shows that I don't know who the openers were. Was I was at the Mudslide show for Rage Against the Machine at Alpine. If anybody else was there, were any of you guys at that one?
No, I was supposed to go to the Beastie Boys and Rage co-headlining tour, but then fucking Mike D dislocated his shoulder and then Rage broke up. So
yeah, there was that. And then I was at the Radiohead Grant Park 2001.
I was there, Beta Band.
What was that, like 10,000 people there? It was insane.
It was more than that. And I, again, as everyone knows, I was there with the owner of the Indianapolis Colts.
Oh, she your pal, or how did that work?
Yeah, she was a close college friend of my high school friend of mine. So she drove up to meet, and I was going to the show with him, so she drove up to meet him, and she came with us.
Did she look as insane as she does now?
Yes. More insane, because she was in her hippie phase.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah, so I saw, she won't remember, and she would deny it if she did, but I saw Radiohead at Grant Park on the Kid A tour with Carly Ursay.
It was
Did she have the headset on so she could talk to the band?
No, she didn't have the headset on to see who was a moron and who was not. It was obviously very clear who was a moron and who wasn't. She didn't need a headset.
Is that the second most money you've ever been physically adjacent to, not compared to the Pritzker incident?
I mean, there were a lot of Pritzker incidents in high school, but probably, that's close. Because you know, my friend, they went to Skidmore together, I think. Yeah, Skidmore. And I would talk to
real wieners, all of them.
And he would always mention his friend Carly, and I had no idea just his friend Carly, and he's like, oh yeah, I went down to Indianapolis to visit my friend Carly last weekend, and he's like, yeah, her dad has Jimi Hendrix's guitar from Woodstock.
Well, not no more, he don't.
And I was like, wait a minute.
He does
wait.
Now, probably.
No, they auctioned it all off a couple weeks ago.
I was like, wait a minute. Is your friend Carly's last name Ursay? And he's like, yeah, how did you know that? I'm like, there's only one person in Indianapolis who would have Jimi Hendrix's guitar from Woodstock. Like, the list is one name long, right? So
it's a weird city. I'll just say that.
Yeah. So
no thanks.
There's a lot of wealthy people in Indianapolis, and I don't know how it happened or what they do.
Because they're racist. That's why they're there.
I know why they're there. I'm just talking about the wealth.
Yeah, I don't get it. I've never been. I've driven through it, but I've never been there.
It's like St. Louis. Everybody lives in some big suburb. Nobody.
All
lives
right.
In
what, what's on the main feed?
Only a couple.
Okay.
Are we still recording?
Are we still on?
All right. First crapper, Ron Recipe. Or I don't know, maybe he's Italian. It's Recipe.
Yeah, Recipe.
Recipe.
Hey-o.
I got to say, that's a great name. Thank you for calling.
What, Recipe or Recipe?
Ron Recipe.
Either or.
You know what Ron Recipe is? A Big Mac. That's Ron's recipe.
It's Mac's famous mac and cheese. He wants to know, how harshly should we judge our beautiful boy TiVo for having signed up for the rebuild, given that everyone that opts here is a loser? I mean, why would a good player commit to this? Last night he played with Lafferty and Slaggart.
Jocelyn TiVo?
No.
TiVo. Tuivo.
Oh, okay.
Our beautiful boy TiVo.
He signed up for it because he's cooked.
Yeah, I think that might be the deal. He signed up because he wanted to steal Kyle's money, and that's what he's
going
to
do. No one's going to pay him more.
Giant checks.
Yeah. Certainly no one's going to pay him more. So, I don't, it hurts to watch, but, like, is that a good career? Cash that check? Move on.
It doesn't really hurt that much.
Not really, no. It's not costing anyone anything. So, yeah. I mean, I think he was probably sold a bit of goods, bill of goods, because they were like, come here, you can skate with Bedard. We need someone who can pass him the puck. And then he's like never skated with Bedard.
Yeah, three coaches have said, no, you're checking. We need to fucking strangle this game.
Right. So, and then you seem to know what you're doing defensively, so go do that. Like, that's probably not what he was told when he signed here, but what are you going to do now?
I mean, they've been putting him, at least up until now, which they should, it'll obviously be Friendell's job, as it should be. But, like, he spent plenty of time on the power play as, like, running the Tampa model that everyone runs now, where he's working the right half wall as the left shot to Bedard's right-hand shot on the left wall, which I think is stupid, because if we want to have a completely tangential conversation, running a completely static power play, the same one that everyone fucking runs, especially when none of these players other than Bedard can find their asses with both hands, just let him go wherever he wants and pull the trigger. You're gonna get a goalie leaning.
Just, I mean, I think they're getting to that now, but
rather than having him just like park in Ovechkin's circle or be along the half wall, like to make the Kane pass.
I hear traffic's terrible around Ovechkin's circle.
Yeah, it blows. A lot of drunk driving.
What's next?
All right. Longtime guy, Seven Blades, with a Z, is now on Blisky.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a longtime guy.
Mm-hmm. You're now GM of the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks get the third overall pick. Oh, hey, thanks. Cool.
Ouch.
Are you drafting it or using it in a trade? And if you were trading it, what would you trade for?
Trade for who?
We can trade for Matthew Nyes because we're sure as shit not giving up.
I mean, I'm giving up the number. I'll give it up if it's part of an Austin Matthews package.
I don't think anybody wants the third overall pick.
Right.
What team wants that? Everyone thinks they're competitive.
I mean,
so like,
the Leafs are the interesting
team.
Well,
Brian Burke did.
Because, the Leafs clearly need to rebuild. They don't have a first round pick, so they can't start it.
Yeah, it's here.
But like, they're also a team that's not gonna decide to start over.
There's no way they're gonna do that. Yeah.
But that's like what you're looking for, right? Like,
I mean, if they're gonna keep Matthews, then should do it for Nylander.
That works. That's probably even a better fit.
I would love it if they could figure out a way to get one of those guys away from them.
Yeah.
But no, this is what Kyle values. Like, he's no, this is his absolute currency. He's not going to trade any picks. He's going to use absolutely all of them. If anything, he'll trade down to get more of them, because this is just it's prolonging the clock, and everything's going to overmarinate, and there's going to be a planetoid that smashes into Earth like the end of Melancholia. None of it's going to matter anyway.
I mean, if I'm GM and I can get Matthews or Nylander or who else is going to blow it up here off the top of your head? Do we know anyone? There's no one on. I mean, Byfield? Did you do that?
Yeah, probably. Wasn't he picked at three? Value
yeah,
for value.
I mean, I don't know if the Kings are blowing it up necessarily. They should. It's not going anywhere.
They just
extended. Where's Caden Lindstrom at these days?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Somewhere in the Jackets system, right? Or no, who, so. Or was that the Flames that drafted him? I don't know.
Does it matter?
But no, the Kings aren't blowing shit up because they re-upped on Panarin, and he's 34 or whatever. So like maybe he seems to be doing the farewell tour, but like they're the ones that are going to need to sell their ass to get another center if Kopitar is in fact done.
He's quite done. I mean, is there anything on the Rangers you want? No.
I mean, eventually hell's coming to breakfast for Vegas, but they keep weaseling their way out of it.
Right, but there's no, like, other than Eichel, who is not even that young, there's no, like, oh, there's a guy we can put on our team and he'll be good for 5 years.
I mean,
Dorofiev?
I suppose that they're going to go down with the ship, but like to if McDavid doesn't re-up there, like, remember that was only a bridge deal.
Yeah, he could be available as soon as next summer. If you want.
Does he
have... Of course you want.
The Hawks might not.
Too much. Too much.
Too much. They have, too high a price. Literally all the money on earth.
Right. They have all the picks, all the prospects, all the cap room.
They get...
We're going to waive. We're going to pass on the greatest player of all time.
Still getting decent crowds, even though there's nothing of substance going on.
Clearly a slavishly devoted fucking fan base, too, if...
It's just funny that they keep talking about how...
Yeah, McDavid's got a full no move, so you'd have to sell him on it.
Bedard's gotten to watch a couple other Chicago teams get in the playoffs, and he's just sitting there like, what the fuck?
He's been at the playoff games. he's literally been in the stands.
Oh, it could be like this? Well, not for you, Connor.
Not for you, no.
Sorry.
No, you can't. You can't have that.
No, we're just going to get players younger than you who are no sure things, and it'll all sort out. It's like a big vat of chili.
I wish it was like a big vat of chili.
I wish,
chili.
Yeah.
And that would only take about 6 hours instead of fucking 8 years. Was that sufficiently uplifting enough?
For yeah. The final is there question? Anything else left on the
main that's
feed?
It. No, that's
we're
it.
Done here. All right. Well, John died, and
he did.
No, yeah. I'm here.
All right. Well, once again, whenever opening day is, I'll be on the Pointless Exercise podcast after it. Might not be until Saturday, but, you know, that's how shit goes down.
But I will be dead after opening day.
You will be dead after opening
after day. Watching the White Sox play, yes.
You're actually going to watch.
No.
You can't watch Schriffen. You can't get through a broadcast.
No, I can't. No. No, the only reason I watch a Schifrin broadcast is so I could text it to the real show so that Andrew can get also annoyed.
I just need somebody who clips the worst shit. That's all I need.
And that's John.
Is he back again?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Jerry loves him. He's ready to fight for the cause. that's good guys wear black tradition.
You don't bring that weak shit up in here.
he's the guy running down to check on Fraser's health.
Todd.
Todd, I almost called him Clint. I couldn't remember which one.
No, Clint was on both teams as well. But he changed his last name to Jackson or something.
Right, right, yeah. And he was bad.
He should change his name to Out of the League.
Nah, not gonna,
not gonna, not gonna work here anymore. All right, that's enough of this.
Yeah,
for John, for Slack, for Matt, I am Sam. Thank you so much for listening and downloading. Please rate, review, share, and subscribe. Until next week, Top Guys. Out.